for me growing up, I don't know whether to call it a tool, a resource, an alien. You know, it was a physical presence that was a part of your clique, your crew. That was the radio.
You know, you were just stuck to your radio dial with two fingers on buttons. Pause, record.
You're flipping through the dial, and it wasn't no digital tuning. It was straight fine-tuning, because you might have overshot your situation. You're like, oh, that's static. All right, we good. Hold up.
You know, you could go to school and talk about, did you hear this new song this weekend? Or did you hear what Red Alert did? Or did you hear what Chuck Chill Out did? You know, you bonded with other people who also kind of were drawn to the music.
Hey, this is Erin Moran from A Girl Called Eddie, and you're listening to 90.7 FM, WGXC, Accra.
Hi, everybody. My name is Daniel Thomas Wachowski. Tune in to the local news for better weather, interviews with your friends and neighbors, and more on WGXC from 7 to 10 every morning. WGXC is here to start your day with democracy now at 8. Tune in weekdays to 90.7 FM to get your morning going.
Wave Farm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Wave Farm and WGXC operate and broadcast. The Mohicans name themselves the people of the waters that are never still following their arrival along the Great Ebb Tide River, also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations and in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For more information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge-Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit mohican.com.
Wave Farm's WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of SJ of Great Barrington, Massachusetts. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra with the WGXC Daily News for Thursday, June 1st. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Rick Carlin reports in the Times Union that Chatham schools are among a half dozen school districts that have purchased 17 electric school buses with the help of a Federal Environmental Protection Agency rebate program, part of the infrastructure law passed earlier this year in Congress. EPA Regional Administrator Lisa Garcia on May 31st said, quote, "Protecting our kids and tackling the climate crisis is a win-win. Transitioning away from dirty diesel and toward clean electric buses is a smart investment in our children's future," unquote. The Chatham Central School District is getting 5 buses. The EPA in April announced another round of the Clean School Bus Grant Program, so more electric buses could be on the way. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Jamil Cutler reports for Columbia Green Media that the city of Hudson wants a few volunteers for its new public works board. The new commission would recommend an annual budget and schedule sidewalk construction or repairs in the sidewalk improvement district. The common council votes on those recommendations. The new board would also provide public oversight of the new sidewalk improvement district. Mayoral aide Michael Hoffman said, quote, "It's important to have a new board like this to basically be responsible for public oversight for the work that happens in the city. We want to get that work done as quickly and as efficiently as possible," unquote. 2 community members, one appointed by the common council and mayor, the other appointed by Mayor Kamal Johnson, will be on the board, with the Public Works Commissioner, the Americans with Disabilities Coordinator, and one member of the common council. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. And Nancy Kern reports for Columbia Green Media that the Catskill Spray Ground Committee will turn Elliott Park into a water park if the committee behind it can raise enough money. The Catskill Spray Ground Committee says it is one-third of the way to raising the funds necessary to build a new splash pad for water play at Elliott Park. Cultivate Catskill and the Fortnightly Club of Catskill members Brenda Vandermark, Terry Weiss, Lisa Leone Beers, Michelle Pulver, and Robin Smith are raising the money. Cultivate Catskill member Pulver said, quote, "We'd like to build this spray ground so it gives Catskill residents the opportunity to cool off and have some fun in the water," unquote. The story and the social media page for the Catskill Spray Ground Committee does not say exactly how much more the group has to raise. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom, WGXC.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, June 1st. And you know what? I am not beholden to anyone else's paradigm, and I think we don't have enough seasons. So let's call this the transition into warm summer. Though you might see some spikes, it doesn't quite average out to hot just yet. Keep listening, you'll see what I mean. Local early morning temperatures range from 43 degrees in Craryville to 58 in Scaticoke. Regional average soil temperature is 62 degrees. Pollen levels for today will be high. Sorry, folks, you just gotta stick it out. Fire up those air purifiers if you got them. Between the cool morning and the hot afternoon, we get a comfy window between 9 a.m. and 11 a.m. as the mercury rockets up to 89 degrees by 3 p.m. Open up those windows around 10 p.m. when it drops into comfy territory again. That's 10 p.m. It starts getting nice. We see a low of 60 degrees, and it may feel damp as the dew point will be in the upper 50s. Tomorrow will be hot again, likewise reaching 89 degrees. After 2 p.m., however, things change and stormy conditions move on in. Could be the first good storm of the season. Just make sure your phone is charged. Saturday, rain chances continue all day and we get a high of only 65 degrees. Sunday, looking similar with a high of 66, still rainy. Hope everybody got out last weekend. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 1:23 a.m., low tide at 8:07 a.m., high tide again at 1:38 p.m., and low tide once again at 8:07 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 68 degrees, and the tide strength will be high. Sunset today will be at 8:09 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:18 a.m. Looking way up, we see we are still in a minor geomagnetic storm watch with a 10% chance of X-class flares. Plasma winds will be average at 414 kilometers per second with an average density of 5 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently pretty bad until dark. And you can blame Angry New Sunspot 3323 for that. Overnight, you might get away with a long-distance transmission under 10 megahertz. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3.6, quiet. The current sunspot number is 147, and this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate, who will be coming at you live tonight at 7 p.m. on the Thingularity Radio program.
There is nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. If we wish to make it softer, we will tune it to a whisper. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. We can roll the image, make it flutter. We can change the focus to a soft blur or sharpen it to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your television set. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
So you like The Better Weather?
I love The Better Weather. I love the better weather. I know, I'm like a little fanboy. Right?
Yeah. Well, The Better Weather is performed by me and Cassandra. Cassandra is a program I created.
Got it, yeah.
She data scrapes the internet.
Right. I figured, yeah.
I basically start my coffee and I get Cassandra rolling. Mm-hmm. She downloads all sorts of data from different NOAA servers, different government servers, compiles them into parts of the script. But a lot of it, I have to work over the data and go, no, there's going to be fog because this is that. And
precipitation and all that, right.
Yeah.
And
right.
Most forecasts are for, like, Albany or New York City,
yeah,
or points of major cities, and
right,
they're
sure
trying to get everybody.
Yeah.
I just got to nail the Twin Counties.
Right, right, right.
It's easier for me to get lucky, and that's all we do. As you know, weather forecasters, we just get lucky.
Yeah, I love that.
And
I
it's exactly what you said, the Twin Counties. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Twin Counties.
I mean, I tried. Once in a while, I cover a little bit beyond. I'm not exactly sure how far our signal reaches. I know parts of Massachusetts can hear us.
Yeah. That's
so
right.
I try to include them sometimes, but
the shoes, yeah,
quite honestly, they're in the average. Our area usually has temperatures and stuff lower and higher than theirs.
Yeah, we fluctuate
right,
a lot
right,
more.
Right.
Yeah.
Mountains and the river.
Yeah. Yeah. Right, exactly.
So you said you created this program. Is it legal?
Oh yeah, 100%. All the data sources are government.
Right. Public data.
Your
yeah
taxes
right
already paid for it.
Right,
okay.
Right, yeah.
So this is free.
Okay.
And to be fair, all the other news sources, they're accessing the same data.
Oh.
Right.
So they're just making the same predictions and their own silly little graphics off of the same amount of data. So I just put it directly to it. And it's most of my information comes from the New York State Mesonet. It is a live sensor network cast across the state that was put in place by the University of Albany.
Okay.
And it covers everything like rainfall temperature, soil temperature. Just like yesterday, we were expecting rain to roll through.
It did.
Did you see it fall? Did you see any of it?
No, I got rain.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, we got a little rain.
See,
I'm in Cloud Rock. I got a little rain.
Okay. You see, that's where I was getting reports from all my friends that it was in little tiny spots, but it wasn't even showing up on the sensors because it was so sporadic. It wasn't a major coverage.
Mm.
But
yeah, it wasn't.
But yeah, it's perfectly legal. Everything is on the up and up.
Okay, that's
and
good to hear.
As a matter of fact, once in a while, I like, you know, I only got a couple minutes in the morning, but once in a while, I'll stop and tell people my sources, like spaceweather.com, NOAA.gov, pollen.com.
You give Cassandra the credit as well?
Once in a while.
And why is she named Cassandra?
Because Cassandra is from the myth of Troy, and she was the one given powers to predict the future that no one listened to.
That's right. She was blind, right?
Yep.
That's right. That's
and
right.
No one listened to her.
That's right.
But she knew the future.
That's right.
So that's what I feel like sometimes.
That's what's
good
up.
That's
what's
really
up.
Good.
I love that. Thank you.
Thank you for asking.
Oh, that's genius.
That was Sun Ra and his orchestra going on an Egypt strut on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
I'm Becca Van Kay. We follow each other on Instagram. Hi. It's nice to see you. I've seen you outside of the Rolling Grocer with Tom and stuff before. And I know this one over here, too. Yeah. I actually used to work a little bit at WGXC and Wave Farm. So.
Tom knows me by face, so he's always like, hey. And I can say who you are, but I'm like, damn, if we introduce each other to each other, then I have a better memory.
Yeah.
Because he's always saying everybody's his BFF. Tom.
He knows everybody. I was just telling Meredith here that, like, she's probably seen Tom. If she's been in Hudson, like, there's a strong chance you've seen Tom around. Yeah.
That's a strong chance.
Yeah.
And if you didn't see him, he saw you, which is just as creepy. So, Becca Van Kay.
Yep.
Let's get into it. What's going on?
Nothing. It's a beautiful day. I feel like I'm emerging from my winter slumber and just loving the sunshine and everything green.
Yeah. It feels a little fallish. I got this
it
one.
Is a little crispy.
I thought it was in August. So I was like, what is going on?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a little crispy today.
Yeah. How about you? How are you doing?
I'm blessed. I got up this morning. I feel good. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
No allergies attacking me. I didn't have to take Claritin today. First day in like a week.
It seems like everyone's having really bad allergies this season.
Yeah. Yep. So, do you have something specific to talk about today? You do.
Yeah, I was asked to come on to talk a little bit about the Community Fridge in Catskill.
Yes. So this is this is a little bit of a, you have to keep her pinched. Tom's going to help out. Isn't it tight?
All right. My microphone was slipping, so just letting the listeners know.
Thank you. So you guys have free fridges. How many do you have?
Just one in Catskill. Yeah.
Where?
And it's on Bridge Street and Water Street, so I think. It's right by the bridge over Catskill Creek, so it's just like one block away from this location. It's on this side of the river, though, so it's on the left bank side, so if you just walk out the back here.
Left bank side.
Yes, left bank side, right, it like looks at foreland, basically. I was not a part of the beginning of it, but I actually thought it was kind of cool that I got to come on to talk about it here, because I got involved with the fridge specifically because of Audio Buffet.
Oh,
yeah.
Audio Buffet.
Audio Buffet is a summertime event hosted at Wave Farm that's broadcast on WGXC. That's like all transmission artists doing a day-long performance, essentially. Like, Tom could probably speak a lot better to Audio Buffet. But so this girl, Bianca, who I think also works at WGXC, was at Audio Buffet and asked me if I wanted to get involved with the fridge, because I had been involved with the micro farm project that was happening during the height of the pandemic. Did you ever hear about that at all?
I did briefly.
Yeah. So that was like, it only really happened during the pandemic. There were outside forces that ended up shutting it down, but this church, St. Patrick's, volunteered their property.
Beautiful.
to let us, the old school. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And they allowed us to grow food, basically, that we donated everything to the Catskill Food Pantry. But when that initiative shut down, I had a void that I was looking to fill. Mm-hmm. And then Audio Buffet ended up introducing me to people who were working with the fridge. So I can't speak to who started it or who, like, and they did a really good job of, like, getting it going. It's very important that we have a working fridge.
Absolutely.
Like, especially with power. Like, I think it's a private building owner who provides power, gives the electric, and I don't know who that is, but thank you so much if you're listening. But yeah, it's open every 24/7, and it's been going, I guess, I've been involved for almost 2 years, and I think it's been going at least 6 months beyond that. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And does it have, like, shelving for, like, dry goods?
Yes, there's a shelf on the outside of it that I think has four shelves for all dry goods, and then a fridge and a freezer.
Okay.
Yeah.
So as you know, we have one in on the other side of the river.
Yeah,
so
two, right? Yeah.
We have one that's down by Kitty's,
mm-hmm.
and we have one that's up by Little Deb's Oasis.
Yep.
So, yeah. And I got to tell you, I give all love to all of those. And I hope that people realize how important it is for people to be able to access food with no questions, no forms. Just if you're hungry, you're thirsty, you go get something.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's dignity in that.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of dignity in that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's important. I think I didn't know a lot about fridges before I got involved. But through mutual aid, network sharing, I've heard, you know, we don't want to police anything, because, like, any type of policing will discourage people who actually need it.
Right.
You know, I've heard, like, a couple of complaints that maybe people are taking too much, but I'm like, that's not a thing, you know? Like, anyone who needs stuff can take it, and I just want to make sure everyone feels comfortable, and all we can do, if we have privilege, is to provide as much as we can, because there's clearly a need.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, especially with... in April was the cutback of the pandemic food stamps.
Exactly.
Benefit,
yeah.
That took place in New York State and New York City. So, and now they're even talking about restructuring the regular benefit because
of the debt ceiling.
Yeah, the debt ceiling, which just hit $1 trillion, but also realizing that food's gone up in cost.
Yeah.
So, like, things that we paid for $3 and not $5.
Yeah.
It's a real problem. And I think places like the Free Fridge, food pantries around the county, all need to have love shown. I mean, I was reading an article that was provided to me by a friend who talked about the labeling of food, and the date stamping of food.
Yep.
And I remember growing up, there was no date on food. And so it was interesting to even find out there's date on diapers, there's date on water.
Yeah.
I mean, water has a specific reasoning, but the fact that there's dates on something that probably could live in that thing for a lot longer than the date
is
also a way to, like, take away access.
Yeah.
And keep people, like,
absolutely
paranoid and worried about food intake. So at Rolling Grocer, we try our best to, like, provide the free fridge with stuff and also put a note in, like, you know, like, even though the date might be a little bit off, these are still good items.
Yeah.
We just can't sell because we have Best Buy, Use Buy, and Sell Buy. And so we try to keep within those lines. Do you know about Rolling Grocer? You shop there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like, for years, I was so frustrated in Hudson that, like, you know, old Hudson serves a wonderful purpose, but I wanted to, I think there was such a need for, like, all levels of all access of food, and, like, Rolling Grocer really filled a void, and I think it's been a really wonderful community asset.
Absolutely.
So thank you for being a part of that.
Well, I'm grateful, too. I mean, you know, with IMA, you have our Long Table Harvest, which is a greening program.
Yep.
Run by Avera Berman, and you have Hawthorne Valley Farm Store, who is a full-fledged store, but they also found synergies within Rolling Grocer to give us the opportunity and, you know, give us some support. So, and then we have the Berkshire Tectonics
Foundation, which also supports our initiative. So
yep.
all of those things together make for support.
Mm-hmm.
And having the Free Fridges support, what do you need? Like, what do you consider, are you kind of rolling into now? Some Free Fridges, I see they also put hygiene, like, on top.
Mm-hmm.
Are you guys in that space, too, as well, where hygiene is being donated as well?
We're open to that kind of, to those kind of items, but the things that our fridges need the most are what I call high-value items, so especially meat, eggs, dairy, fresh fruits and vegetables, ideally organic if you can, but understand that that's not always accessible, and especially prepared foods,
oh yeah.
bottled water, because people don't have time to make things, so if they can go to the fridge and grab a meal, a home-cooked meal, or like a commercial kitchen prepared meal,
right.
That makes all the difference, I think, yeah.
And just so people know, we're not, a prepared kitchen meal is not saying that your kitchen isn't good enough to prepare a meal, but when you're dealing with the public, it has to have specific requirements for New York State rules and AgriMarket and the health department.
Yes.
So it needs to like have a space where you can say it's clean and hygienic. It needs a space that is animal free.
Yeah.
It needs a space that either has a wheat content rating or a milk rating.
Mm-hmm.
So when you go to these commercial kitchens that you can prepare food in, typically the label is going to have some of that prerequisite for you.
Mm-hmm.
And you simply have to just kind of name the thing and give a weight to it. Yeah.
my microphone is tipping again. I want to make sure it doesn't fall. Yeah, that's really well said. Like, yeah. you know more than I do, I assume, from yeah. Rolling Grocer specifically. But, yeah, that's all. And I assume it's, like, liability related right. also. Right. And
allergy possibility.
Yeah,
allergies,
that's
yeah.
a really excellent point. And I guess I'll just also plug, I think, the new co-op in Catskill
Please
has a
do.
Commercial kitchen.
Yeah.
that people can rent. I don't know anything about the logistics of that, but I have been seeing that. So,
yeah.
like, the community co-op that just opened right next to Avalon Lounge.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
I think any place that can offer a community kitchen, even for rent,
mm-hmm.
it's like doing a service.
Yeah.
Because if somebody just has a few hundred bucks and they want to do something, preparing meals and putting them in free fridges is
mm-hmm.
like for even for Ramadan, for instance, if you are Muslim, or let's say you like the idea of Ramadan and you don't really know how to pray or how to do all the other stuff,
mm-hmm.
you're like, how can I take part in Ramadan? You simply could feed people for 30 days.
Yep.
That is a Ramadan requirement. So
yeah.
if you can't pray, you feed, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so doing that would mean accessing a free fridge, maybe making a bunch of soup, freezing it, and then just, like, donating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
yeah, that's such a good idea.
Yeah,
yeah that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for that information.
Yeah.
And, again, just give us the location for the free fridge.
Yeah, it's Bridge and Water Street. Look, it's like a diagonal from Foreland. If you're about to go over the bridge from the Main Street side and you're headed towards Coney Island, it's going to be on your left, near left side.
Yep.
Yeah, it's open 24/7, and you can find us on Instagram at Community Fridge Catskill. Or you can email us at communityfridgecatskill. We have a full shift of people who clean every day, but we're always open to more volunteers so that our volunteers can get like a break every now and then, or if like we need an emergency fill-in. Also, anyone can donate through our Instagram, or you're also just welcome to raise money yourself. It's a totally open source thing. We're very non-hierarchical. I'm just one of many volunteers. And so anyone can donate, anyone can fundraise on their own time, and then bring food whenever you want, take food whenever you want. It's open for everybody. It's free, and no one will judge you.
That's a fact.
Yeah.
And you said it was, is it .org or .com, the email?
It's communityfridgecatskill@gmail.com.
Thank you.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're joined today by Eric Weltman, one of the New York State leading organizers on climate, and particularly works for Food and Water Watch. As undoubtedly many of our listeners know, the president and the House Majority Leader, Republican, announced a deal on the debt crisis. I will point out that so-called deal still will need congressional approval, and there are certainly unhappy members in both parties and lots of debates about amendments or how to deal with the situation. But the deal itself largely announced that funding for domestic programs is frozen, while yet more money will be available for the military, plus the IRS can't go after rich tax cheaters. And there's lots of other bad details, many of us would say, that continue to emerge. We're joined by Eric so that he can provide us initially with an overview of what is sort of concerning about the climate that's in the proposed deal, and we'll do a follow-up question about how does that impact upon New York. So welcome, Eric.
Thank you. Food and Water Watch appreciates the opportunity to join your show. Folks may recall that last year, Food and Water Watch and allies beat back Senator Manchin's dirty pipeline deal, not once, not twice, but three times. We had thought that the third time would have been the charm, but unfortunately, iterations of Senator Manchin's, dirty pipeline deal, did emerge from the negotiations, as you mentioned, Mark, between President Biden and the House Speaker McCarthy. And so those, machinations resulted in, again, a form of that dirty pipeline deal, which really has devastating climate impacts for New York and for the nation and for the world. It gives the green light to Senator Manchin's pet frack gas project, the controversial Mountain Valley Pipeline, and it contains dangerous permitting provisions that gut environmental protections and would maintain our reliance on dirty fossil fuels. So Food and Water Watch and our allies are very much pressing for Senator Schumer in particular to back what we're calling a clean debt deal, a deal that doesn't contain any provisions that undermine access to food stamps, another concern that's been raised by the deal, and certainly one that doesn't contain any dirty energy poison pills, such as the ones that we beat back not once, not twice, but three times last year, going up against Senator Manchin, who's the coal industry's favorite friend.
So I was certainly remiss in failing to acknowledge that, unfortunately, the deal does expand work requirements, particularly the age requirements for primarily single adults. But, more money for the military, forced work for the poor. Now, I understand that Food and Water Watch actually took to the streets out there by Grand Army Plaza, Senator Schumer, a couple of days ago. What was that all about?
Yeah, so Tuesday night, Food and Water Watch and our allies and New York Communities for Change and 350 Brooklyn and a host of other organizations had 100-plus people outside of Senator Schumer's apartment in Park Slope, Brooklyn. We had a 20-foot-tall mock oil rig. We had a bunch of wonderful banners, garnered some tremendous media coverage as we literally took to the streets, blocking Senator Schumer's, street in an effort to encourage him to block the dirty pipeline deal, to block the dirty permitting deal. As folks are probably well aware, he's not only New York's own senator, but he is the Senate Majority Leader. He's been complicit, unfortunately, in supporting Senator Manchin's, pet frack gas project, the Mountain Valley Pipeline, which, if folks aren't aware, it's a very controversial project. It stretches 303 miles wood between West Virginia and Virginia. The communities have been fighting it for years. It would have a devastating impact, on our climate if it were to be built. It's proposed by hundreds and hundreds of frontline communities. And the statistic is that this one pipeline would be responsible for emissions equivalent to 26 coal plants. So Senator Schumer, if he doesn't fight back against this deal, it would be a climate catastrophe. So we need Senator Schumer to call for a clean debt deal, again, one that doesn't punish low-income communities and one that doesn't devastate our climate.
So I'm going to play devil's advocate for a moment on the issue of permitting reform. Obviously, everybody's concerned about, you know, greenwashing, greenlighting fossil fuel projects. At the same time, you know, in New York, it used to take 10 years to get approval for wind and solar renewable energy. The governor Cuomo tried to pass a law, tried to cut it down to 2. I remember talking to New York City mayor's office a number of years ago, trying to get them to buy 100% renewable energy, and particularly buy offshore wind, which need to be developed. And they just looked at me, Mark, we can't wait 10 years. So how do you solve permitting reform?
Mark, this deal does nothing to advance the construction transmission lines. It does nothing to advance the permitting renewable energy. That was put on the table to be discussed later. This was horrible deal making, frankly, on the part of President Biden. He gave away the store. Everything positive that could come out of genuine permitting reform did not happen. This really just guts environmental protections as they come as applied to fossil fuel projects. And again, specifically green lights, the controversial Mountain Valley Pipeline. This is not a climate deal. This is a step back for the climate. And we need perhaps some permitting reform that fast tracks the production of renewable energy. This deal does not do that. It does not do that at all.
Now, if you talk to President Biden, as I'm sure you do on a regular basis, I mean, he would argue that, hey, I've done more for climate than any president in history. How much money, you know, I gave. Since the Democrats, starting with Biden, claim they want to do the right thing on climate, why are they so often doing the wrong thing?
Well, you could point to all the fossil fuel money that the likes of Senator Manchin as well as Senator Schumer are getting. These industries remain, you know, very powerful in particular states. And, you know, I'd love to, you know, be in President Biden's shoes, but I think this is indefensible.
Okay. So we got about 90 seconds left. So sort of a two-part question. Probably an earlier question, but are there particularly any unique impacts to New York from this deal? And if people wish to express their opinion to, I don't know, President Biden or other elected officials, do you guys have any type of mechanism to assist in that process?
All right, part one. Well, at the risk of saying the obvious, the climate impacts of the Mountain Valley Pipeline alone would have consequences for New York. I mean, we're all impacted by climate change, no matter where we live, by projects just like this, just about anywhere. But absolutely, it would, you know, gut provisions of the National Environmental Policy Act, which is the landmark legislation that requires environmental reviews of projects. It freezes funding for the Environmental Protection Agency, which obviously has, you know, climate and environmental impacts for New York. In terms of putting the heat on Senator Schumer, Food and Water Watch does have a hotline, 866-961-4293. I'll repeat that. It's 866-961-4293. We encourage folks to visit the Food and Water Watch website where they can learn more and take action and sign up and get involved.
What's that website?
It's foodandwaterwatch.org. Okay. foodandwaterwatch.org. Again, the hotline of Schumer is 866-961-4293.
We've been talking with Eric Wellman, Food and Water Watch, and this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. Wednesday, May 31st was a busy day down at the state capitol. I covered 3 events. Part 2 will cover the Criminal Justice News Conference for Clean Slate and the Housing for All rally for Good Cause Eviction. This segment focused on actions at National Grid's Electrification Conference at the Renaissance Hotel across from the Capitol. Groups were protesting National Grid for not doing more to transition rapidly to clean energy. A top priority is the New York Heat Act, which would direct state agencies like the Public Service Commission to incorporate the new climate law into their policies. In particular, groups want to end the hundreds of millions of dollars annually that ratepayers are charged to subsidize fossil fuels, including expansion, otherwise known as the 100-foot rule. The SAFE Act would also cap utility bills for low and moderate income households at 6% of income. A rogue group of dinosaurs did make an appearance, accompanied by corporate lobbyists doling out money to thank National Grid for their efforts. We hear from Mary Finneran, one of the dinosaurs, Pete Looker, one of the corporate lobbyists, climate youth activist and college student Katie Marshall, and Better Broad of New Yorkers for Clean Power. Earlier today, Mary Finneran dressed up as a dinosaur. So, Mary, what was the point of being a dinosaur?
The point of being a dinosaur is that National Grid is hosting the Electrification Summit. And we think that that's a little bit hypocritical, and because they are greenwashing everything. And so we think that dinosaurs, who are the source or partial source of fossil fuels, would be a good symbol to show the hypocrisy of National Grid.
Are there, you know, particular issues? I know this is the end of the legislative session that you all are focused upon, trying to get the legislature to pass.
Well, there's the New York heat bill, and there was a group of people who were doing an action about that. And the New York heat would stop the 100-foot rule. It would actually cut down. It would make heating bills, fuel bills, 6% of what the people, for people of mid and lower income. And it would just provide means to get off of fossil fuels. And we're really supporting that bill. But the dinosaurs were separate. The handlers, the dinosaurs really needed handlers because they were quite rambunctious. And also it was kind of hard for us to see. But we were handing out money that was from National Grid to Kathy Hochul, $1 billion. We had all kinds of information.
What was the $1 billion symbolic of?
It's just symbolic that National Grid will pay just about anything to get people to allow their fossil fuel interests to continue.
And why dinosaurs?
Well, because dinosaurs are fossil fuels. That's the source of the fossil fuels, was when the dinosaurs were alive, and also they went extinct. So we were pushing an extinction for all, that if we continue with the fossil fuels, everybody will go extinct, and the dinosaurs want some company in their extinction.
There have been certainly misinformation campaigns being organized by various fossil fuel interests. Has National Grid been part of that, or people here at the Electrification Conference?
I am sure. I can't.
So what has the disinformation campaign been about?
The disinformation campaign is about the fact that they're saying that, you know, they're going to be eliminating fossil fuels or backing off on fossil fuels, when actually a lot of their plans would increase or at least sustain or maintain the fossil fuel industry from going on.
So is there any sound effects that went with this, Mary?
Ah! It was the pterodactyl. Of course, we can't know what pterodactyls actually sound like, but I thought that was probably close.
Thank you, Mary Finneran. So we're now joined by Pete Looker, who also took part in a demonstration. But, Peter, I understand you were not dressed up as a dinosaur for some reason.
No, I was dressed up as with my three-piece suit as a lobbyist, the ones that actually directly give the money to the politicians.
And were you handing out any money at the Renaissance Electrification event, or...?
I handed out some money, and I handed out a couple of checks. We do a lot of it, not just today, but we do it all the time. So we gave $350,000 to the politicians on in National Grid to defeat the electrification policy this year. And we gave $165,000 in campaign contributions to New York politicians in the last 6 years. Governor Hochul happens to be our biggest recipient. So she's got a big pocket, and we've been filling her pockets. for her campaign. Now, while the legislature is trying to close out the session and not apparently doing much on climate, it was sort of interesting that Governor Hochul went around the state instead to promote a listening tour about the Environmental Bond Act, which already was passed. Do we need more money for climate than what is in the Environmental Bond Act?
Yes, we obviously need to do more, and we need to do it faster. That's my humble opinion, because that's been my opinion for the last 30 years.
And are there a couple of things that you particularly would like to see the legislature do before they go home for their six-month vacation?
New York Heat, the Heat Act now, that would be one.
Thank you, Pete Looker. We have a return appearance by Mary Finneran.
Just one quick thing. One way that National Grid is showing their hypocrisy is even though they are saying they want to electrify everything, they are one of two clients for the Iroquois natural gas pipeline that they want to expand the amount of gas going through to get more gas into New York City. So that's just one point where they aren't pushing for the electrification in New York City, but they are pushing to get more gas because they say that it's needed. Whereas the PSC said that New York City doesn't need gas at this time when they denied National Grid's vaporizer plans to vaporize liquid natural gas to put it into pipelines for Brooklyn. So that's actually two examples of where National Grid is being hypocritical.
Thank you, Mary. We next hear from Katie Marshall. Get up at 4:30 a.m. this morning from Rochester to come. What motivated you to come and sort of protest National Grid?
First of all, it was super fun to be a dinosaur. We don't always get to have as much fun doing demonstrations and protests as we did today being dinosaurs. But in general, I mean, I am 24 and I'm in grad school and I'm like, don't really believe that we have a future going past the next 10 years. And so that's what really motivates me to do this work in general. This protest was just a good one that I had time to do. I just finished a semester. And, you know, National Grid and other fossil fuel lobbyists have the money in this fight, and the money gets them in the door, and they get the ear and the support of politicians. And so we have to fight back in whatever crazy creative ways we can come up with.
So what would you like the politicians to do about climate at this point?
Here in New York, the best way for us in the future is to pass the New York Heat Act in the budget and to make sure that we're transitioning to electrification in buildings and in vehicles and building up the grid around that.
My name is Betta Broad. I'm the Director of Advocacy and Organizing at Association for Energy Affordability and Campaign Director at New Yorkers for Clean Power. And here today because we're doing everything we can to enable a timely, managed, equitable transition of our building sector, to electrify our buildings, to make them as energy efficient as possible, and get off fossil fuels as quickly as we can with protections for the most vulnerable New Yorkers so they're not paying any more than 6% of their income on their energy bills. And that is what this transition is all about, protecting New Yorkers, making it equitable, and protecting our climate for future generations.
And you have a website if people want more information?
nyforcleanpower.org.
Thank you very much.
This was Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Paul Kirby reports in the Daily Freeman that Republican Representative Mark Molinaro said on May 30th that he will vote for the debt ceiling bill negotiated by President Joe Biden and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. Molinaro said in a statement, and I quote, "These negotiations resulted in a bipartisan agreement on the Fiscal Responsibility Act. I support the agreement. The agreement raises the debt ceiling until January 2025 and makes historic cuts to the federal spending that is driving inflation. It also makes bipartisan reforms to SNAP, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, and the TANF, Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, strengthens Social Security, protects Medicare and veterans' benefits, and grows the economy, end quote. The reforms Molinaro mentioned are adding more work requirements to receive food stamps and other emergency benefits. Molinaro lives in the 18th Congressional District but represents the 19th Congressional District. Pat Ryan, a Democrat who represents the 18th Congressional District, says he is leaning toward supporting the bill, saying, and I quote, "We both have to avoid catastrophic default and make sure we support our national security, our veterans, and most vulnerable. Kids and seniors in particular. I am encouraged by the bill, but still need to see the final text after the amendment process is complete," end quote. Democrat Paul Tonko, who represents Albany County in the 20th Congressional District, has not yet said how he will vote on the bill. Republican Elise Stefanik, a Republican representing Rensselaer County in the 21st Congressional District, crowed about the bill on C-SPAN, saying,
"The Fiscal Responsibility Act is a historic step to restoring fiscal sanity and holding Washington accountable."
Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. Bobby Welba reports in the Hudson Valley Post that smoke from far-off Canadian wildfires is settling in the Hudson Valley. The National Weather Service warned on May 30th that, and I quote, "A plume of Canadian wildfire smoke is forecast to drift over the area and could lead to decreased air quality," end quote. The National Weather Service warned that, and I quote, "widespread haze," end quote, is forecast for the Hudson Valley as, and I quote, "smoke from Nova Scotia wildfires is moving westward. The smoke is being smelled at ground level. Be alert if you are planning to be outside later today or tonight. Smoke can hurt your eyes, irritate your lungs, and worsen respiratory illness," end quote. Officials warn anyone with respiratory ailments to limit outdoor activities this week. Read more about this story in the Hudson Valley Post. Melanie Lekasevic reports for Capital Region Independent Media that the town of Coymans has proposed an amendment to the zoning code that would mean that properties that fall within several zoning districts would be required to adhere to the most restrictive zone. Officials from Lafarge Holcomb Cement Plant, one of the town's largest landowners, spoke against the amendment at a public hearing on May 11th. Attorney Javed Afzali from the law firm Harris Beach PLLC said on behalf of Lafarge Holcomb, and I quote, "As you know, Lafarge is probably one of the largest property owners in the town, holding something over 3,300 acres, comprised largely of one parcel that is 3,200 acres and that falls within several different zones, primarily and mostly in the industrial district. But there is a portion of the property, a small slither, in the R1, a residential district," end quote. Afzali objected to the cement plant having to follow residential rules. Town Supervisor George McHugh said, and I quote, "Right now, if I have a 200-acre piece and 20 of those acres are industrial and 180 is residential, I can right now, with the code the way we have it, I can treat that entire 200 acres as industrial. That's the problem," end quote. McHugh suggested local law number 4 will have some changes posted on the town's website before the public hearing resumes at the town board's June 22nd meeting at 6 p.m. at Town Hall. Read more about this story at theupstater.com. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow. And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Thursday, it will be sunny with a high near 86 degrees. On Thursday night, mostly clear with the temperature low of around 62 degrees. And on Friday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms after 2 p.m. Otherwise, it will be sunny with a high near 88 degrees. And on Friday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 59 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC 90.7 FM radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
And now we're joined by a guest. I'll let you introduce yourself, but I do understand you are part of the reason why we have this beautiful ensemble of a place called the Left Bank. And your name is?
I'm Dave Snyder, yeah.
Dave Snyder, nice to meet you. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thanks so much for coming.
So let's take us back. Let's act like I don't know where I'm at right now. And you're telling me about this place for the first time, and you're walking into this place. Give it to me.
Well, welcome to Left Bank Ciders. We're a small cider company in Catskill, New York. We make small batch ciders from local apples, some of which come from local orchards and some of which come from wild apples that we forage in the Catskill Mountains.
Beautiful.
And this is our tap room. Our production space is just in the back on the other side of this wall.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is a open to the public. We also have other beer, wine, and liquor from other New York State producers.
So you're pretty much a local ran and run company.
Totally.
Uh-huh. That's beautiful.
It. Yeah, you got it.
That's like zero emissions.
Right. It is. Well, that's one of the things. And interestingly, my business partner, Tim Graham, that's why we ended up here, because we're in the basement of this building.
Yeah, that's right.
When you're on this side, you get all this beautiful daylight.
Mm-hmm.
And as you walk to the back, you walk. Because we're on a hill, you're basically walking underground.
That's right, because so up there is street level.
Exactly, you got it. So when you get to the back, then you're fully underground. And so it's a passive, you know, it's always good fermentation temperature. So in the back where we do all our fermentation, where we make the cider, we don't even have any HVAC. So
that's
it is
beautiful.
Fully sustainable that way, yeah.
That's what we like to hear. We like to hear of that, what is it, ingenuity and
right.
business mind, right?
Yeah.
So you guys thought this through. Is this your first business?
Yeah, both for Tim and me and our third business partner, Tim's life partner, Anna. This is all of our first business.
What brought on the name of Left Bank?
Well, you know, Anna and I are both writers, and Tim is an artist. And so we were just thinking about, you know, the Left Bank, the Rive Gauche of Paris, and the artists and writers and the culture around there. And then, of course, we're